From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
You know, we all need an occasional reminder on how to maintain a healthy heart. And also, we need to hear about some new research on how to do that, what's helpful and what's harmful. Dr. Michael Pistotnik is an internal medicine physician at the University of Utah's Redstone Health Center, and he specializes in a healthy heart. Now, aside from the usual reminders of maintaining a healthy lifestyle, he'll also talk to us about some of the new research on intermittent fasting. Michael, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, give us all the reminders. You know, we all know you shouldn't smoke and you need to watch your diet, but go into that a little bit, things that maybe we forget about how to maintain a healthy heart.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of modifiable risk factors with respect to cardiovascular disease, and I think it's important to define what cardiovascular disease. So most people tend to think of it as heart disease, which we as clinicians define that as plaque deposition in the coronary arteries that often leads to heart attack. Cardiovascular disease is much broader than that, typically involves valvular problems, problems with the electrical circuitry known as arrhythmia, also deals with structural heart disease, either congenital or acquired, that results in heart failure. So in terms of overall risk, cardiovascular risk, the two most modifiable things that we can do are managing cholesterol levels and smoking. So it turns out that smoking significantly increases your risk for cardiovascular disease. It causes inflammation, causes plaque deposition in the heart, and is just stressful on the system as a whole. And what we found is that when you quit smoking, within 2 years, you have a significant reduction in your risk as a result of the smoking. And then by 10 years of no more smoking, you actually have the same cardiovascular risk of that of someone who never smoked in their life. So the benefit of smoking cessation is tremendous, and it's why we push it so much in primary care, because it's an easy thing to do, although it is also difficult to do given nicotine addiction is very hard to overcome. And then the other big component that we spend a lot of time in primary care is talking about cholesterol, and cholesterol management is the highest risk factor for heart attack. And with the advances that we've made, particularly surrounding cholesterol management, we've seen a close to 25% reduction in cardiovascular death since 2014. And we're seeing way better outcomes overall. And so we really push cholesterol management as a primary focus for heart health. And cholesterol management is a little bit of a nuanced discussion, because there's a lot of discussion about statin therapy, which is a cholesterol-lowering medication that inhibits particular enzymes that are related to cholesterol production. And there's a lot of risk factors associated with statins, so there's also a component of diet and exercise that comes into all of this. And so those are two of the things that most people can do that can have a significant impact on their overall cardiovascular health.
Oh, you brought up so many questions in my mind. So I'm going to start with cholesterol.
Sure.
And, you know, I know in current research and literature, there has been, I don't know, maybe some oppositional findings on cholesterol, because A, we know that we need a certain amount of cholesterol.
Right.
And B, well, I'll just give myself an example. I went in for my yearly checkup and I had higher cholesterol than, you know, it was kind of high, and I've never had that before, but my ratio was still good, the HDL to LDL. Mm-hmm. My doctor said he wasn't really worried about it. Try to change your diet a little bit. And I did. I cut out red meat and most meat in general for a couple of months. Actually, it was even a couple of weeks, and I was worried about it. So I went back and had my cholesterol tested again, and it was fine. And since then, I've talked to people who said, oh, yeah, I just started to eat oatmeal, and within 2 weeks, it was completely different, which makes me think that cholesterol, it sort of depends on time of day and what you've eaten maybe the week before. How variable is it, and how much should we get worried about it when we see a high score?
Sure. So cholesterol, by definition, fluctuates based upon a number of factors, and I won't get into that because I'm not nearly an expert in that field. But there are two particular cholesterol levels that we focus on. First is the HDL cholesterol. We call it the high-density lipoprotein. And we think, based upon the research that's been done to date, that it has a protective cardio effect, and that it it helps protect against cardiovascular disease. And so the targets we usually want in men, HDL greater than 40, and in women an HDL greater than 50. So we look at that number, and we want patients to try and attain those goals. And the easiest way to do it is through increased exercise and diet. Diet seems to be a huge component, and as we start to study diets more and more, we're learning that diet and the way we eat has a significant impact in actual overall health. And I'll get to the diet here in a second. The other component to the cholesterol profile is the LDL cholesterol. It stands for the low-density lipoprotein. And we think that that's the cholesterol that is really responsible for progression of cardiovascular disease. And so we really target that as what we want to try and achieve while trying to raise the HDL. And it turns out that for every 1% reduction in an LDL level, you get a 1% reduction in your cardiovascular risk. And for every 1% increase in the HDL cholesterol, you get about a 2 to 3% decrease in your cardiovascular risk. So there are documented benefits that we've proven through scientific research that these are important. And so how do you manipulate those levels? Well, it's a combination of exercise and diet, and then plus or minus pharmacologic therapy with statins. The diet that seems to be the most beneficial, and I don't know if you saw the U.S. News and World Report about that they ranked 35 diets, and the number one diet overall was the Mediterranean diet. And that's the diet that I particularly focus on because it has a lot of data supporting it. Primarily, it's a diet that focuses on fruits and vegetables as your main source of energy consumption, followed by lean protein, primarily in the form of chicken and fish. Very limited red meat. In fact, if you read some of the diet instructions, it's red meat no more than 2 times a month. Focusing on healthy whole grains, polyunsaturated fats like olive oil, and then avoiding your processed carbohydrates and sweets. And just by doing that, you can see a reduction in LDL levels. And it also turns out that there are other things in conjunction with the Mediterranean diet, such as red yeast rice, which is an herbal supplement that you can purchase at health food stores. When it's been looked at in clinical trials, it actually has a lipid-lowering effect, and it appears to work on the same mechanism that statins do, and it can lower cholesterol slightly, nothing that you'll get with the potency of a pharmacologic manufactured cholesterol-lowering medication, but when used in conjunction can have a significant benefit on lipid profiles. The guidelines just kind of were updated, and we no longer go away from targets per se. There's still targets that we try and achieve, but overall it's about a risk reduction in the level of the LDL. And so that's kind of how we manage statin therapy, is how much of a reduction we're getting, and that's how we guide our therapy.
With the recent Happy New Year's and resolutions and mm-hmm. I think, you know, my wife has already put me on a diet, so more of a Mediterranean one. Also, would you recommend, you know, a regular check-in with your doctor to see that progress? How would you really kind of encourage a longitudinal impact versus just a two-month thing?
Sure. So as an internal medicine physician, I typically focus on people 18 years of age and older and throughout course of life. You know, when you're in the younger later or earlier years of your life, you know, your late 20s, early 30s, a 1 to 2 year follow-up is probably sufficient, getting annual lipid screens. The recommendations say if you have a normal lipid profile in your 20s and 30s, you can go as far as 5 years before you repeat. We tend to shorten those intervals the older you get. So in my middle-aged patients, we'll say 40 to 60, I'm checking lipid profiles every year. Turns out that the 40 mark is kind of where the guidelines are set for age, about where we want to really be monitoring statin therapy. Because if we catch cholesterol management early on in life, the progression for heart disease is significantly reduced. So the guidelines are all centered around age 40 and above. So getting a lipid profile every year, if there are abnormalities, having a discussion with your physician about what can be done with that. Should you pursue further testing to decide how significant of a burden your risk is versus lifestyle modification in the form of increased exercise, Mediterranean diet with a small amount of alcohol involved in this, because there is an out benefit with the small consumption of alcohol, and basically avoiding other unhealthy things like smoking and things right. like that. So
I guess there's a little bit of a nerd in me as a cyclist runner that I'd want to, you know, check in every month, every 3 months. Is there some aspect or some a tool that one could, hey, I'm going to do this Mediterranean diet, I'm going to check my lipids, you know, every 3 months?
Unfortunately, it requires a visit in the doctor's office. So usually for patients such as yourself that are interested and we're trying to see what the overall effect of their lifestyle modification is, I bring them back about every 3 months and look to see how much of a reduction we've got, and kind of following on other things like blood pressure management is a huge component to cardiovascular health, making sure that you're not manifesting signs and symptoms of insulin resistance, which predisposes you to diabetes. So it's kind of a multifactorial approach. So for some of my patients, and you know, practicing up in here in Park City, the population tends to be more healthy. A lot of them want to know that data. Yeah. And interestingly enough, there is a new scoring system called the calcium artery scoring system, which is a CT scan of your coronary arteries. And we don't do it for everybody, but if people have significant questions about what does my burden really look like, we can put them in the scanner and we can look at how much calcium is actually deposited in the arteries of the heart, and it risk stratifies them as being low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk. And you can get a sense of what your cardiovascular health looks like in that way. What the test will not tell you, and a question that comes up a lot of time, is how significant the degree of narrowing that you're getting with the plaque. Unfortunately, we don't have that data with the scoring system, so you need more invasive procedures to determine that.
We're speaking with Dr. Michael Pistotnik of the University of Utah Redstone Health Center. But tell me, Michael, how often you're up here? Are you up here every day? Or
so I practice Monday, Tuesdays, off Wednesdays, and Thursdays and Fridays. And then the clinic is set up as such that every 8 weeks it rotates that we do a half-day Saturday clinic where we'll see patients as well.
Okay, great. Oh, so you're off Wednesdays. You could come on once a month and update us.
Exactly.
And we will
live checking of lipids.
I like it. And by the way, I did get that calcium test because I was kind of freaked about my cholesterol and I had zero. So it kind of it just put me at ease about that and made me realize I need to just cool it on the red meat. Before we let you go on, unfortunately, we just have a minute left, but we wanted to ask you about intermittent fasting because this is one of your areas of interest, and there are varying studies on intermittent fasting as well. What's your take?
So there's actually a review article that was just published on December 26th in the New England Journal of Medicine going over intermittent fasting, and it's kind of an interesting thing, but overall, the form of intermittent fasting that I prescribe for my patients is this 5-2 ratio. So basically you're eating a normal diet 5 days of the week and then 2 non-consecutive days you're fasting. And I prefer a 20-hour fast with a 4-hour feeding window. And it turns out, based upon the data...
that just gave me an image. Yeah. Strap on the feed bag.
Yep. It's hard to do for patients, but we kind of taper them down. So we start more reasonable goals. And the idea is by month 4, we get them down to a 500-calorie intake during that 4-hour window. But it turns out that the data is showing that by doing that, we're actually causing cellular adaptation, which is probably what was mimicked back before we started having full access to food, where we're actually reducing oxidative stress and overall inflammation in the body, which is having marked effects on cardiovascular health, cancer prevention, diabetes and insulin resistance, aging, neurocognitive deficits, and so forth. And so I think one of the things that we're going to start seeing in medicine is there's going to probably be more of a shift about looking about how we actually eat, because as we learn more, we're learning that our diet is such a huge impact in our overall health, and we may have been doing it wrong. And it's going to be a challenge because it's been so much ingrained in our society and our culture that you need to eat 3 meals a day and snack and all that. And maybe that probably is looking like it may not be the best approach to overall health. And so we'll see what comes out of this. But there's a very interesting article if people want to read it. It's in the New England Journal of Medicine in the December 26th issue. And it goes through all the health benefits and kind of the pathology behind it. So it's interesting.
Oh, we will post that when we post your interview on our website. So go to kpcw.org. New England Journal of Medicine on December 26th, the health benefits of intermittent fasting. And hey, will you come back maybe next month? And let's just talk about intermittent fasting.
Absolutely.
This was too brief.
Yes, we can do that.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for visiting us this morning, Dr. Michael Pistot. Oh, why is that so hard? Pistotnik.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
great
thank you
to
for
have
having
you.
Me.
The Redstone Health Center, you can visit them there Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and sometimes on Saturday. And otherwise, he'll be here on Wednesdays. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Stay
with us. It's The Mountain Life. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.